You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and the places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiatakis. If you head over to Rancho Park Golf Course these days on the west side of LA, you'll notice the place is packed. For years, the game of golf saw a steady decline in participation nationwide until the pandemic hit and options for entertainment waned.
I started off because my friends were doing it before, and I was like, well, this is the only thing that we can do during the pandemic, so why not?
That's Scotty Sari. He and his wife, Jessica Yoon, are among the roughly 3 million Americans who picked up a club for the first time last year. You can see golf's newfound popularity on full display all across Southern California. Courses are booked solid. Golf stores can't fill their shelves fast enough. Even driving ranges have long wait times. But as more pandemic-era restrictions are lifted and the options for outdoor activities expand, will these new golfers keep playing? KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb covers the business of Southern California, and he picks up the story from here.
Jessica Yoon says she never thought she'd become a golfer.
I think growing up, I did a lot of like creative kind of hobbies, like dance and piano, and like my dad being this hardcore golfer, and he would watch like golf tournaments on television. I thought it was so boring.
Does that sound familiar? Perhaps that's how you feel too. But for Yoon and her husband, Scott Izeri, something changed during the pandemic. For months, there just wasn't much else to do that was safe. And so they gave it a try and now are hooked. After all, there's a whole industry and a whole lot of gadgets available for golfers. That is, if you can find it these days.
Well, as you take a look at our store right now, you see empty pegs on my glove wall. You see empty bins in my grip area. I have empty bags, empty hats, clothing, clubs. I mean, it's literally everything that we have. It's hard to get.
Dan Mamano manages the Roger Dunn Golf Shop in North Hollywood. It's a massive 12,000 square foot retail store, and it's got everything. Like other retail sectors, golf apparel and equipments have been affected by disruptions in the global supply chain during the last year and a half. Couple that with an increase in demand and...
pretty much everything is double fault, whether that be repair center, special orders. If I had the supply, then we would be able to do even more, which is pretty amazing to tell you the truth.
Empty shelves, courses booked solid. Can we really attribute all of this to having nothing else to do? Partially. But there are also a couple of other things going on, too. For generations, golf has struggled with inclusion. Some of the most storied golf courses, for example, like the private and very exclusive Augusta National Golf Club in Georgia, home to the Masters Tournament, didn't admit its first female member until about a decade ago. Now, there are signs that that's slowly changing. The number of female golfers, both women and juniors, actually rose by about 450,000 in the year 2020 when compared to 2019. That's according to data by the National Golf Foundation, which is a research group that's kept tabs on the sport since the 1930s. Among them is Jessica Yoon, who says golf has become a new thing for her and her friends to do together.
So, like, we're going out just as, like, four ladies on the golf course. I have a mission to, you know, maybe try to get a birdie or a hole-in-one before the end of 2021. So, like, the drive is there. Ooh, pun intended as well. And then, yeah, I think I'm in it for the long haul.
She may be into it, but for those in the golf business, they'll tell you the game's survival depends on getting kids into the game. And that requires making things like new balls, new clubs, and tee times more accessible. On a recent weekday late afternoon in Pasadena at the Brookside Golf Course, Ina Alon pins down several colored ribbons in parallel lines on the putting green near the starter's shack.
We have beginner's classes today.
She's an instructor for the First Tee of Greater Pasadena, which is a golf instruction program for kids. Alon's family is from the Philippines, and she grew up playing golf. She remembers just how easy it was to outgrow her equipment, especially at a young age, and just how pricey replacing that equipment could be. That's exactly why the First Tee of Greater Pasadena has been offering free club rentals to kids during COVID.
They grow so much so fast. It makes it easier for you as a parent to be like, all right, well, I want them to try, but I don't want to have to spend $100 every couple months. So that's nice.
There are about 450 students enrolled right now in these summer programs. Others are on a waiting list. That's almost double the number that the first tee of Greater Pasadena is used to. But if you ask teaching pro Larry Tomoyasu, who gives lessons over at Brookside, he'll tell you he's skeptical that golf is going to stay this popular. It's just not about accessibility, he says, but also the time commitment.
Because it takes 5 or 6 hours to play, and then it's very difficult to play well. Now, if you don't mind playing well, you can play, but playing well is very hard. It takes a lot of time.
Let's say you're one of those people who thinks golf takes too long and is too hard to play. When you drive by a course, you probably find yourself asking, shouldn't this be something else? Well, you're not alone. From activists to politicians, there are a lot of people right now that are thinking about what California's golf courses could become, from parks to even affordable housing.
All right, KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb, who joins me, by the way, right now to talk about these other uses for Southern California's golf courses. Benjamin, I understand there's a bill in the legislature in Sacramento that would remove some of the protections for golf courses. How would that work?
Yeah, so Steve, this is specifically for public courses. Private courses are a whole other animal. But right now, public courses that are owned by local government, they cannot be developed. They must remain open space under state law. Now, technically, a city like Los Angeles could, if they wanted to, repurpose a course, maybe turn it into, I don't know, a softball field, a soccer field, but they can't build anything on them. Democratic Assemblymember Christina Garcia of Bell Gardens has this bill that would change that, and it would allow local cities to basically decide if they want to build something like housing.
We know that a park is good for my quality of life. We know that additional housing stock is good for my ability to stay in my community, for me to be able to afford it. And if you're hitting these walls of affordability in the affordable part of Valley County, like, what chance do we have if we do not open up spaces like this?
So Garcia says it all comes down to who these facilities are for, who benefits from them. Oftentimes, in her mind, golf courses are just not for the folks that live nearby, especially in park poor neighborhoods. Now, she's introduced her bill. It happened earlier this year. It's not going to be picked up in the legislative session this year, but it's certainly echoing in the halls of the state legislature in Sacramento.
So what is it that's standing in the way, Benjamin? I mean, is there pushback to it?
There definitely is, especially from golf boosters like Craig Kessler, who's with the Southern California Golf Association. He says in his mind, it would be a shame to lose these spaces for golf because people do enjoy them.
One of the great ironies is that when you drive by a golf course, it can be packed. It can have two or three groups on every hole, and it doesn't look busy because of the size. Far more persons on a daily basis, far more citizens use, in this case, we're talking about municipal golf courses, than use virtually any other parkland amenity.
There are some other things too, Steve. I mean, golf courses do generate revenue, unlike some other park amenities, though although that was flagging during the pandemic, it's kind of picked up again now. Golf courses often are full of wildlife too, but the counter argument to that is, well, then why not turn them into something like a nature preserve? Steve, at the end of the day, we're gonna have to see what happens, right? If this boom in golf does subside, so too perhaps will the resistance to development on these sites. This also doesn't even address some other issues like upkeep for the golf courses. I'm talking about water use, especially during the drought. So there's all sorts of issues that are at play here.
And we'll keep an eye out for it. Obviously, it's an evolving story. KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb. One day we'll hit like 9, right? And see what happens.
Hey, listen, I'm happy to take your money, Steve.
Well, from the putting green to the pitcher's mound now, or not. Dodgers manager Dave Roberts says he does not expect Trevor Bauer to be on that mound anytime in the coming days. Major League Baseball put Bauer on administrative leave amid recent sexual assault allegations against him, something the Pasadena Police Department is investigating. A lieutenant telling USA Today that the probe is, quote, bigger than we thought, end quote, saying authorities have received new leads. Matt Moreno is managing editor of Dodger Blue, which is a website of journalism about the Dodgers. It's independent of the organization, and he's been writing about it. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Steve. How's it going?
I'm all right. Can you give us a quick sort of a TikTok of what happened with Trevor Bauer last week and what these allegations are?
A woman from San Diego has accused him of, alleged assault over kind of two separate incidents that they had this year. The Dodgers issued a statement once the reports kind of surfaced last Tuesday saying, you know, they've been made aware of it and they were going to follow the direction of Major League Baseball. And then a few days later, as you just explained, MLB placed Trevor on administrative leave, which is a 7-day window initially. They can request to have it extended if they still need more time to conduct their investigation. No criminal charges or anything, no arrests made, but different reports kind of suggesting that there may be other issues or incidents, but it's really kind of unclear right now.
Do we know about, you know, some of the allegations in the past? Because there are a lot of daggers like pointed at the Dodgers right now. He's one of the highest paid players in Major League Baseball. For signing him and not knowing, apparently, what some of the allegations in the past have been.
I think a lot of the stuff in the past has been the way Trevor has kind of conducted himself on social media and interacted with either female fans or reporters and, you know, been a little hostile in those. And so when the Dodgers did sign him, that was what a lot of the criticism was based on, I believe. And, you know, I don't think anybody obviously would have necessarily expected something to this extreme would possibly become an issue for them.
I think it should be noted that Bauer did not appeal the administrative leave, which you say can be extended as well. But I also need to, I mean, these are some serious allegations that Pasadena police is looking into. This is a woman who apparently had to be hospitalized. He's saying that it's consensual sex. She's saying that, no, this went way beyond consensual sex, that he, you know, he brutalized her.
Right. There are medical reports kind of indicating that she was examined by a doctor and there was, you know, some head injuries, which at that point, obviously, you kind of, it's in the law enforcement's hands to determine and figure out what, you know, sort of happened, because it at least for now is a little bit of he said, she said, and I don't mean to kind of, you know, make light of the situation at all, but it is, you know, there isn't necessarily concrete that the police have been able to find yet, at least that I've to my understanding.
Have other women claimed that he has assaulted them physically?
Not that I have seen, but the USA Today did have a quote from a representative from the Pasadena Police Department sort of suggesting that there may have been other cases either with other women in the past or perhaps the woman who has a temporary restraining order. Like I said, unfortunately, there's just really not much clarity with the entire situation right now.
I think one thing and something that's playing out on social media, a lot of people are asking the Dodgers, how did they not know that there was this sort of dark cloud, right? Like by the way, someone is presumed innocent until proven guilty. But there was just a lot going on. There were hints and allegations of a lot of things. And like you said, his social media past had been pretty dicey as well.
Yeah, you know, I think one issue is it's my understanding that the temporary restraining order didn't necessarily take effect until last week. And so that's kind of how everything came to light. Before that, I'm not really sure how much the Dodgers would have known or could have known. I mean, the social media stuff, yes. And when they did have kind of the introductory press conference, Andrew Friedman said it was something that he and Stan Kasten spoke to Bauer about. And they were comfortable, you know, that he would learn from his mistakes, if you will, and improve in that regard. I know the Dodgers have taken a lot of criticism for not taking action themselves. Some of that is the way it's been collectively bargained between Major League Baseball and the Players Association is once MLB launches their investigation, a team cannot take any sort of disciplinary action on their own, which was why nothing happened from Tuesday, last Tuesday until Friday when MLB finally placed Bauer on administrative leave.
So he's on this administrative leave. When's he scheduled to start? On Friday?
It would have been Friday, yes. But, you know, it's unlikely that Trevor will make his start this week. I think the administrative leave will be extended, you know, into the All-Star break and, you know, kind of maybe then go from there.
What do you think's going on in the PR department, the marketing department over at the Dodgers right now?
It's definitely a tough situation. Stan Kasten spoke with some reporters in Washington, D.C. after the team's visit to the White House. Other than that, Dave Roberts has kind of been the front man answering questions. he was very much deferring and explaining that the team is just deferring to MLB in this case. Dave Roberts did say that he spoke with Trevor. He, of course, declined to provide any specifics or the nature of their conversation. Stan Kasten offered similar thoughts of, you know, just we need to kind of wait and see, let the process play out, and then, you know, the team will may have something a little bit more formal once everything is kind of settled.
And again, he hasn't been charged. This is still an investigation by the Pasadena Police Department. But again, there's a lot going on here, something that we're going to keep an eye on. I want to thank you, Matt Moreno, managing editor over at Dodger Blue. Matt, thanks for your time.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Let's call the new film Summertime not a love letter, but a shove letter to LA. Powerful words that just keep on pushing.
This morning, the sewer water smelled like butterscotch, and I found a beetle flattened into the concrete of Koreatown.
Summertime follows the intersecting stories of 27 young spoken word poets over a single day in Los Angeles, from Venice to Crenshaw, burger joints to Korean noodle houses, the bus, the train, a limo. The film fuses music, spoken word poetry, and vibrant cinematography.
And my sure step says sure. You can ask me for directions. It's true, I do know my way around this angel angst town, all its ins and outs and in and outs. All the creatures hidden in crevices, gone off track.
The film stars and is written by youth poets from the Get Lit organization. That's an LA-based nonprofit that teaches spoken word. And joining me now is Lori Koenig, an English teacher over at Cleveland High School in Reseda and a mentor at Get Lit, and Jason Alvarez, who graduated from Cleveland and stars in the film. Hey to you both.
Hi.
What's up?
Lori, I want to start with you, and if you wouldn't mind describing what you'll see when you watch Summertime.
You're going to see a lot of really interesting parts of LA, and you're going to hear a lot of amazing poetry coming out, having been written by high school students, by students just out of high school, about things that are super duper important to them and to other people as well.
It was directed by Carlos Lopez Estrada, who's best known for the film Blindspotting that came out a few years back. How did this film come to be, Lori?
Well, I met him for the first time at the final slam, the Classic Slam, which is an event that Get Lit puts on every year in April. And it involves about 70 or 80 schools in the greater LA area, and we all go and compete in a spoken word slam. And then that year, our school we were in the finals, and Jason did one of his amazing poems, which was great. And Carlos was in the audience and saw that. And he had been affiliated a little bit with, he knew the founder of Get Lit, Diane Luby Lane. And he had heard of them and heard some of the poetry from the students and was really impressed. And I don't want to speak for him, but I'm guessing that he had this idea about combining, you know, life, real life in LA, not the life that we see frequently on TV, but what it really might look like to people who aren't rich and famous. Combining that along with the spoken word from all these unbelievably good poets.
Jason, I'll get to you now. It seems like a film that's not necessarily rooted like in Hollywood's version of LA, right? This is,
yes, sir.
This is like to the street level. This is to, you know, every neighborhood and the nooks and crannies of LA. And you play a graffiti tagger in the movie who's always being chased away.
Jason, get the out of here, bro.
Easy, fool. Let me just finish real quick. Chill.
You do this every week and it always gets painted over. Why are you here?
Because this city needs me. It would miss me if I stopped. You would miss me if I stopped.
You would miss me if I stopped. I want you, Jason, to talk about your involvement, number one, in Get Lit, and your relationship to the spoken word.
Well, it's a crazy story. Where do I start? I didn't know nothing about poetry coming into poetry. I thought it was just Shakespeare or like Dr. Seuss, you know?
Yeah.
That's quite a range right there, Jason.
Yeah. That's pretty ignorant.
No, not ignorant. It's you know, I mean, you know what you know. And I mean, I wonder, you know, what kind of life experience that you bring into it? You know, what are the scenes of you in the movie? Are they inspired by your own poetry and your own experience in L.A.?
I'm just myself in the movie. That's what I like. I'm authentic. I'm genuine.
Are you a tagger in real life? I don't want you to indict yourself. but you know, have you been known to, you know, put some of your art in public places?
I'll put it this way. I do draw. I do draw, and I would leave it up in the air if I do it legally or illegally.
But what is it? What is it about the day to day that makes you want to write? That makes you want to put it on paper, or makes you want to draw? I mean, what are the feelings that you have when you do all of that?
Drawing. I've been drawing since I was a little kid. That's how I think, because my mind is always at 1,000 miles per hour. In the writing aspect, I write for the person in the back of the room who needs to hear my stories, you know? The person in the back of the room is like feeling that they're going through some situation alone, and I want to reach out to them with my stories.
I want to play, Laurie, another clip from the film. This is Markeisha Babers, who's performing her poem. And it's heart-wrenching. Her poem, Shallow. Let's listen.
You said it might be better if I died. If I died and came back reincarnated as a beauty queen, because right now I'm not doing too good with this beauty thing. So I said, I pray and wish that I was made of lead so I can erase and start over like you said, but I'm not. So instead, I tried being dead. You were the reason for my third suicidal attempt and an attempt to come back different, but I'm already different. So to come back different for being different would mean to come back the same. And I said, it's strange. I heard people say everyone's different. You said, stop. Stop making excuses to be useless. You said the only reason that people will be attracted to me is because of my breasts. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, makes sense. I mean, people have actually asked me my bra size before they asked me my name.
Wow.
It's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And it's so powerful. I mean, it really hit me. She's crying through all of this. I'm crying through all of this. Talk a little bit about Markeisha and how you... How do you teach teenagers to channel that pain into poetry?
Well, wow, how long do you have? In answer to your question, I think part of it has to do with telling kids that their story, their experience is legitimate. Is not only are people interested in hearing it, but we need to hear it. I remember, Jason, do you remember with talking about Doña Consuelo? We talked about, you know, his neighborhood. And it's like, if he doesn't tell that story, who will? If Markeisha didn't tell her story in the NPR in our big public high school that needs to be torn down, then who the heck else is going to tell that story? You know, when they hit something, tell them. You know, like Jason, we had an assignment after Hamlet, right? We read Hamlet, and the kids had to memorize one of Hamlet's speeches and then write a response to it, which is kind of what we do in Get Lit. So Jason chose the to be or not to be speech, right? One of the hardest ones to do. And he got up and he did it.
The soliloquy. Yeah,
exactly. That soliloquy. So he did it, and then he thought he was being slick. He didn't actually write his response. He just started improvising. But it was so good, and the kids and the other kids in the room were just loving it. So you got to kind of grab things like that and say, look what you did, you know, look how interesting that is, look how good that is. And then there are a lot of writing techniques, and you try this, you try that, you stay after school for a little while, you do this, you do that, and kids are amazingly open to it. I think some people might be surprised at how eager sometimes kids are to write about, you know, their own stories.
Jason, you've been drawing since you were a young kid. You going to now continue writing and performing as you get older?
Forever. I'm be continue writing till the day I die. Writing can live on forever. And I think my kids can show it to my grandkids, and it can be passed down through generations.
Jason Alvarez stars in the film Summertime, which premieres this weekend at the Landmark Theater in West L.A. Laurie Koenig, who teaches spoken word at the nonprofit Get Lit. I want to thank you both. What a powerful movie.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us, man. Appreciate it.
That's all the time we have for today. Tomorrow, there's an offshore wind farm planned off Morro Bay. What locals along the central coast have to say about it, that's tomorrow. How about joining us at kcrw.com/greaterLA? Check out any stories you may have missed. Tell us how you're doing. Most importantly, subscribe to the podcast at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Get it delivered fresh to your feed. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Sonia Geist, John Meek, Phil Richards, Mario Saavedra, Amy Todd, Jody Adler, Sue Margulies, and Christian Bordahl all put a lot of time and effort into today's show. Thank you for your ears and time. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have yourself a great Tuesday.